Blog Talk Radio.
I thought Seth Rollins was turning babyface. Does saving Roman Reigns from a beatdown turn him back heel in the eyes of the fans? That is one of the topics we'll cover today on the PW Torch Livecast. Raw credits just rolled seconds ago. Seth Rollins running out to save Roman Reigns from a two-on-one attack beatdown from Kevin Owens and Rusev after Roman managed to beat Kevin Owens by crawling out of the cage door first and landing on the floor to upset. I can't believe Michael Cole phrased it that way. Here we are in September 2016, and Kevin Owens beating Roman Reigns is framed as a huge upset, or a notable upset. And the beatdown went on and on and on, and then all of a sudden there's Seth Rollins music, and he runs out, scales the cage, leaps off the top of the cage onto Reigns and, onto Rusev and Kevin Owens. And the crowd cheers, and Cole plugs Clash of Champions coming up on Sunday, and that's where we leave off. Got a lot to talk about in today's program. Give us a call. Our number here at the Livecast is 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. I'll be joined by Joel Dennell, a PWTorch.com contributor, mainly known for his Lucha Underground TV reports. He'll be joining me to talk about Raw and Lucha Underground, and we'll even talk about our NXT in-person house show experience in St. Paul yesterday in the afternoon before the Vikings beat the Packers. It's fun to say that at the new U.S. Bank Stadium in downtown Minneapolis. I do want to note that Pat McNeil, veteran columnist for Pro Wrestling Torch, over 15 years writing for the Torch and doing audio shows, will be my co-host immediately following SmackDown tomorrow night. Thanks to all of you who are listening to us live right after Raw and SmackDown go off the air. And, of course, to the rest of you, the majority of you, who listen on demand. You can find our shows on demand to stream or download at pwtorchlivecast.com and also on iTunes and all kinds of popular podcast apps on iPhone, Android, and even Windows phones. I think they're still out there. So I hope you'll continue to support us and continue to listen. And then I'll be by again on Wednesday at 1 Eastern for the midweek flagship, covering lots of different topics in professional wrestling, including a preview of The Clash, Raw, SmackDown, Cruiserweight Classic, anything else you want to talk about. And then Interview Thursday at 1 Eastern. I'll be hosting that coming up this Thursday. Last Thursday, by the way, Kevin Nash. You might be watching him in the background or might have already watched him if you're listening to us later on demand with Scott Hall and the Kevin Nash and Scott Hall interview with Legends with JBL that debuted on WWE Network right after Raw. Kevin Nash was my guest last Thursday on the live cast. A coincidence of timing. You can check that out and some good interviews recently on Interview Thursday. You can find them all at pwtorchlivecast.com. Hey, how would you like to get all of your favorite sports teams merchandise? Like maybe, I don't know, a Vikings jersey after their victory over the Packers. I think the Bradford jerseys after his stellar performance last night. We'll talk to Joel about that too. He's a fellow Viking fan. After a stellar performance last night, maybe you want start showing more support for the Minnesota Vikings or your favorite sports team, wherever you're listening to us, all kinds of major league sports, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL, college sports, and more. You can do so inexpensively with FanEssentials.net. All you do is go to FanEssentials.net and pick your favorite sports team. And every month, they ship a box of your team's gear right to your door. They find cool sports gear so you don't have to stand in lines at the arena or overpay at the mall. Each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at just $34.99. Visit fanessentials.net and use promo code PWTORCH and take 30% off your first month. That's 30% off the normal $34.99 rate. Visit fanessentials.net to get all the sports essential merchandise that you need. Again, that's fanessentials.net. Coupon code at checkout gets you 30% off. Type in PW Torch. All right, let's again give out the phone numbers, 515-605-9345. The phone banks are filling up fast. Get in line. If you call that number, be sure to push 1 on your touch tone phone to move into the caller queue. If you are calling from a rotary phone, you are out of luck. Let's bring Joel Dennell into the program. Joel, welcome to the Monday Night PW Torch Livecast.
Thanks for having me, Wade. I'm really excited to be here. You know, I'm making my debut as a co-host with Wade Keller. You know, Wade, this is something that's really special for me, actually, because I first started listening to The Torch in 2011, and I had been a fan since 2005, if you can believe that. And then I kind of watched for a long time, and then I just kind of stopped because it got kind of boring. You know, it was like the Vince McMahon, Bret Hart kind of deal at WrestleMania. And so then I started to get more interested in wrestling after I heard about the whole CM Punk thing at Money in the Bank. And the first site that I went to was PW Torch because I wanted to know, was this something? Was this a shoot? Was this real or was this work? And so I just became more and more interested in learning about the history of wrestling, learning about the reporting of wrestling. And that just kind of ties into something that I read on PW Torch about becoming a volunteer for the website. And that's something that I've done about 2 years ago. And it's been something that's been really cool for me that I'm able to talk about wrestling, and it's super rewarding that my stuff actually gets posted on PW Torch, a website that I read, you know, as a kid, reading about CM Punk. And now, geez, how many years later is it? 5 years later, I'm co-hosting with Wade Keller, who I was listening to reporting about CM Punk 5 years ago. This is cool, Wade.
Joel, I thank you for that. It was a great introduction. You took a lot of the things that I was going to say about your background and ran with them, and better you saying them than me. I really appreciate what you've contributed to The Torch, too. You've done really good work, and it is you and people like you who help round out all our coverage and add different voices, and that's something that we've been known for. And what the route you took is a familiar route that I think a lot of people who have written for the website since we launched in late 1999, or for the newsletter even predating that, they all have their own story, but there's some similarities there, and it's cool. I smile when I hear that you know, people like you and your story, and that you are thrilled to be part of what we do here at The Torch, and now it's cool to have you on the live cast. And the crazy part is, Joel, how many of the same wrestling events have we been to in the last couple of years and managed to miss each other? And last night we finally met in person. Yesterday afternoon, we finally met in person, and it was fun to shake your hand and chat with you. We had scheduled you being, well, no, I guess we scheduled you being on the show right after that. But we had talked about you doing something along the line at some point before that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, gosh, how many events have we gone to? We're both in the same building, haven't met each other. God,
even ROH.
It's been a lot.
Yep.
I know.
I thought you were starting to think you were avoiding.
Well, I mean, probably at that time I was like... Well, that was my whole gimmick in my reports, is that I'm looking for Wade Keller.
Yes.
Do I see Wade Keller? That guy might be... Well, you know, there was an ROH event I went to a couple of years ago, and there was a guy sitting in the front row that I'm like, is that Wade? Maybe. And it definitely was not you, so thank God I didn't go up to him. But finally, I got to meet you last night, Wade, and it was a pleasure. You know, now you can tell everybody our story, that we met at the NXT event in St. Paul, very historic for Wade Keller.
Yes.
It's going to be our version of you meeting Bruce in Baltimore.
Yes, or me meeting James Caldwell for the first time in Los Angeles, filming the Ultimate Insider series with the Hardys, Matt and Jeff Hardy, about 10 years or more than 10 years ago now, I think. Cool stuff. All right, enough about us, but thank you for that. Let's shift and talk about Raw. Just ended. Seth Rollins having a bit of a backstage spat with Stephanie McMahon, who kind of unleashed on him a little bit, saying, I wasn't in on it, but maybe Triple H was right to do what he did. And you did, she was sort of like, well, maybe Triple H would argue or contend that you cost us the WWE World Championship being on the Raw brand. And so maybe he was right to side with Kevin Owens. And Seth is like, I know how you guys work, and I can make life miserable for you if you don't watch it. Seemed like the furthest he had gone in a babyface turn, going at it with Steph, and Steph kind of coming down on him. And then we get a moment I put on Twitter right before Seth ran out. If Seth makes the save here, I'm not saying it was a genius forecast. It was pretty obvious they were setting that up. But I said, if Seth makes the save here, does that make him a heel again? Because this was not Roman's night, Joel. He had another good, nice cage match with Kevin Owens. He had a really nice match with Kevin Owens on Raw last week, mm-hmm. but he got booed when he came out at the beginning of the show. One of the loudest, I would say it was the most negative a crowd has been for Roman in a while on Raw, which is saying something, because it's not like he's beloved week to week. And then boos again 3 hours later when he came out for the main event. But the fans were happy to see Seth, and he leaped off the top of the cage and landed on Rusev and Owens. Your thoughts on, in particular, Joel, what they did with Seth tonight?
Yeah, I think it's definitely before, you know, they had kind of, the authority had kind of turned on Seth, and now he was kind of in that stalemate spot where he hadn't really done anything babyface, and now he's starting to turn towards that babyface turn. I mean, no character really should just all of a sudden be, you know, I'm the good guy. It's kind of a slow process getting there, and I think they're doing a nice job of Seth is kind of seeing, oh, I'm seeing through the authority. That, oh, they're not, they've picked a different guy. They're not behind me anymore. And so now he's going to kind of go against the authority. And I'm guessing there are some that what they were trying to do is have Seth be the good guy by helping Roman Reigns, because in WWE's mind, Roman Reigns is, you know, the next big star. He's the next big thing, even though he keeps getting booed and booed over and over again for all the events that he's at. But in WWE's mind, Seth Rollins coming out and helping Roman, that's a babyface move. And they're trying to get him cheered now. I mean, it was a slow process, but now they are definitely pushing towards having Seth Rollins be the babyface.
Getting inside Vince McMahon's head and WWE Creative's head, is this more of an attempt to take the popularity of Seth, which is there? I mean, when he returned at Extreme Rules in May, Travis Bryant and I were in the crowd for that, and man, to the crowd pop for Seth. That was a huge babyface reaction. Huge, as Bernie Sanders would say. And the crowd wanted to love him. But he's done a good job for a few months being a heel and being smarmy and irritating and abrasive. But, you know, now he's clearly going babyface or went babyface tonight. That feels like a turn. That felt like Nikita Koloff saving Dusty Rhodes after Magnum's car accident. You know, the heel coming out and going, I'm with you. The odds are against you when I'm on your side. Is management trying to get Seth over, or are they utilizing Seth to try to help get Roman over? Because Roman hasn't been popular with a huge segment of the audience since the Shield broke up. Are they actually hoping that Seth is just a conduit to get Roman over? Because if Seth likes Roman, then maybe the fans will like Roman again.
A little bit of both. I think it's more the latter, though, that it was pretty clear that the fans were ready to cheer Seth Rollins, and that's what the fans wanted. They wanted to cheer him. And so now they're starting to go in that direction, but WWE is looking at this as the perfect opportunity because they can pair him up. They can juxtapose him right next to Roman and get a little bit of that, that crowd get behind Roman Reigns. At least that's the hope that they have, is that some of that from Rollins is going to rub off on Reigns. And I mean, that's yet to be seen. I think you're going to see a little bit of people are cheering Rollins, but they're still going to boo Reigns. I mean, you kind of saw that with The Rock and Reigns before, that they used The Rock to try and help out Roman Reigns and it didn't work. I think that people are going to like Seth Rollins, but they're still going to boo Roman Reigns. It's not going to work the way they want it to.
I think you're right. If you're joining us in progress, Joel Dennell is my guest co-host today on PW Torch Livecast following Monday Night Raw here on Monday, September 19th, 2016. We're going to go to our first commercial break of the show, and when we come back, we're going to start taking phone calls. We want to hear what you have to say about the show. Our phone number, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. 1-800-795-9345. Got, I guess, just 5 or 6 on hold right now. We should get to more calls on that. So call now if you want to get in line and hold your place. When we come back, your phone calls, we'll talk about Raw, and then later in the show, Joel and I will talk about our NXT Live experience in St. Paul yesterday and some thoughts on the latest episode of Lucha Underground. I think Joel has something to say about that episode, so we'll get into that when we come back. Hold tight, and some more Raw discussion and more right after this word about our website, which, by the way, you can volunteer to contribute to, as Joel did a couple years ago. We've got a post up about that. We'll be adding to the team of writers at pwtorch.com. We got some old slots that need filling and some new slots that I'd like to create, and some details on that are available at pwtorch.com. Here's some details on our website that drives the news and our coverage in print, in addition to the audio we do here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch Livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. And just like that, we are back. Don't forget, you can support PW Torch by shopping Amazon, by starting not at Amazon.com, but at pwtorch.com/Amazon. It's that simple. Just go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the link to your country, and shop away. And everything you buy on that trip, we get a commission for. We thank those of you who are doing it already, and we beg all of you to do it, or we just ask kindly. Either way, hope you'll do it. pwtorch.com/Amazon. Very logical. All right, I'm joined by Joel Dennell, pwtorch.com contributor, Lucha Underground TV reporter, and we are talking Raw. Let's dive into the phone calls, and let's go ahead and begin at area code 540, and then 915 is next. 540, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Michael from Northwest Virginia. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Thanks, Mike. Michael, what have you got for us?
Hey, just one thing real quick I wanted to point out to you. Your co-host comes in crystal clear, but ever since you started on the livecast, the audio on your end is very, like, it comes in broke. I don't know what the deal is, but it sounds perfectly fine when you listen back on the recording, but right now your audio comes in broken for me. I don't know. I mean, I have 4G and
yeah,
I have perfect service right now, so I'm not sure what the deal is. I just want to let you know that right off the top.
Sure, we'll definitely look into it. Yeah, definitely. We'll check into it, and if other callers want to back that up, then we'll try to figure out a solution. Anyway, we're getting a little, speaking of sound quality, we're getting quite a bit of feedback on your end, Michael. I don't know if you're on Bluetooth or what, but if you can, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I was just moving my microphone around. Hey, real quick, I have 3 points. Two of them are fairly quick. Bo Dallas, you think they're putting him out there right now? I'll hit you with all these straight off. Bo Dallas, do you think they're putting him out there right now, sink or swim? The next one would be the Cruiserweight title lineage. Why are they saying that TJ is the first Cruiserweight champion and they're kind of abandoning the old Cruiserweight title that they had? They've done that the same, you know, with the women's title too. And then finally, the number of pay-per-views that they've set here recently, they're coming up with 19 a year. If we deduct that the big four are going to be multi-brand, that leaves 15 supplemental pay-per-views. Do you think they're leaving it at an odd number so that every year it rotates to the other brand so that it's not exclusively Hell in the Cell for Raw or, you know, that each brand gets a chance to rotate through the different pay-per-views. And that's all I got.
All right, cool. Thanks, Michael. Three good topics. Joel, do you want to grab one of those to begin with, and we'll go from there?
Sure. I'll grab on the Bo Dallas thing.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, they've split the rosters in half. Half of them are Raw, half of them are SmackDown. And what they've kind of found out is by splitting up those rosters, everything's getting a little thin. So they're just kind of using everything that they got. They're pushing what they got and putting them out there. That's why they're putting out Braun Strowman. They're putting out Bo Dallas. You're seeing Primo and Epico get out there. Alicia Fox. They're just kind of throwing out what they have because they need to fill out 3 hours. And I think when the cruiserweight division kind of gets more in there, that they're going to have some more guys to use. But otherwise, they're just kind of digging deep into the roster and just kind of, you know, letting them sink or swim by just putting them out there.
Yeah, I think with Bo, it could be sink or swim in the sense, I mean, the reasons he's getting TV time are what Joel, you just said. I mean, the roster split into 60-40 split, Raw getting 60%, and that means without AJ Styles and a whole group of others who would normally be filling TV time on Raw, they've got to give time to others. And they are, I like that aspect of the roster split. I mean, I think that giving guys a chance to grow or have some space to grow at least and to see if they can make it is worthwhile. I don't know that I'm convinced that Bo will fail, as some people are, but I'm not confident he'll succeed at getting an edge back. But I think he's giving it a good effort. They're giving him a chance to do it. Getting squash match wins on TV it means management's giving you an opportunity to get yourself over by having a segment all to yourself. You know, I mean, that's what the Braun Strowman squashes are for, and the Nia Jax squashes were for that. So I like that. Even if it doesn't work, I still think it's worth a try. It's tough to come back from doing a comedy gimmick with a high, squeaky-voiced Bo Dallas Believe character where he was so all in, but he wasn't someone you would take seriously. It's difficult to come back from that and come across as having this real edge unless you have a certain type of look and ring style. And I think he's trying to be, for sure he's trying to be more aggressive in the ring, but I just don't know with his look. He's not fat, but he's kind of flabby and kind of has a flabby, pudgy look relative to most people on the roster. Look, would be a fit guy, you know, selling insurance. But not necessarily in wrestling, standing out in the top two-thirds of the roster physique-wise. So so he's got a lot in that sense working against him. But I think they're giving him a chance, and I'm willing to see if it can work. As for number two, the Cruiserweight title lineage, yeah, they really are kind of starting fresh, Joel, with a lot of these things. I understand, obviously, with the WWE World Championship merged, and they want to talk about how far back the lineage of that goes. The women's title, they want a clean break from the Divas. And it's been such a mess. It's unfortunate. I talked on the Keller Hotline for VIP members last week through all the belts. They have this new, really cool graphic interface on WWE.com showing the history of all the titles, how long they were around, a list of the champions, some cool stats about how long each person held the belt. And they did separate the Cruiserweight Championship. Joel, why not just say it was retired and now we're picking it back up, but acknowledge the lineage? Is it they just want it to seem new and fresh and not a continuation of something that kind of fizzled at the end? That would be my best guess, unless there's some logistical reason I'm not thinking of.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty much the reason why. And TV and in their documentary features, WWE picks and chooses what they want to acknowledge in history and what they don't. And so they're just kind of choosing to not acknowledge that we had a Cruiserweight Championship before, and the last person who held it was Hornswoggle, and it was treated like a complete joke, and nobody cared. So they want to completely rebrand it and just have it be its own title and just start fresh with it. And they don't want to acknowledge that old history. And I partially don't blame them for it, because towards the end, the Cruiserweight Championship meant nothing, or pretty much nothing. So really, I can't blame them for starting out fresh with it, but that's just kind of what WWE does, that they get into certain things and then they want to promote it as something new and they want to ignore the past. That's kind of what they're doing with the women's championship. You know, they want it to be something that's new. They don't want to be looking at the past. They want it to be brand new. It's happening now. So, yeah.
What do you think of the colored belts?
They look like they're marketed towards kids. That they that you go into Toys R Us and you're going to see the purple Cruiserweight Championship. Great. My favorite color is purple. I'm going to buy that belt. I see a blue SmackDown belt. Great. I love the color blue. I'm going to buy the blue belt. They're just these, I don't know. Yeah, you said it the right way the other day, that they look like a bunch of candies you get in a Dots box at the movie theater. I mean, I personally don't prefer these, you know, very bright colored belts with the big WWE on there. I personally prefer, you know, the old school WWF belt, the Eagle belt, and the Attitude Era belt. You know, just a big gold plate. You know, you can have a couple jewels in there, but just something that looks more serious. This kind of looks like more of a joke.
Yeah, and I know they want to do the whole color scheme, the red brand, the blue brand. It's weird they just chose purple for cruiserweights, because it's sort of, it makes sense if they were going to be on both Raw and SmackDown, and maybe eventually they want to do that, or will do that if they think the rosters are deep enough, because certainly there's already more cruiserweights than there are women on the roster. So they could do it if they wanted to. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm just, I'd rather have a subtle hints of red and blue on the belts and maybe on the side plates or something like that, but with a black leather, black vinyl look otherwise. So, but anyway, mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, I don't think anyone's going to watch or not watch just because of that, but it is kind of symptomatic, I think, of some of the marketing decisions and the branding image of WWE. And I think that stuff does all add up. You know, there is a branding to UFC that people identify with, and they want to be known as UFC fans, and the belts are one of the aesthetics that is part of a bucket full of reasons that they are either proud to announce to people that they're a fan of WWE, or are a little bashful about it, a little shy about it. And WWE gives people plenty of reasons to kind of sometimes hide that they maybe are a fan of pro wrestling. I don't know that they should voluntarily add to it with candy-colored title belts. So yeah, I mean, it's not the biggest deal in the world, but I think it's a discussion point that a lot of people are having right now. Okay, as far as the pay-per-views go, I don't think WWE's necessarily thought that far ahead, Joel. The number of pay-per-views and a number and rotating which brand has which show, I just assume they would always be that the Clash would always be a Raw show and on with the branding, and it, maybe in 7 years it'll sink in with us which brand is aligned with which of these endless pay-per-views being mm-hmm. offered on the network. Do you think there's a chance, though, that they actually rotate which brand is affiliated with which show?
Oh, you said it before. They have not thought that far in advance. I mean, it'd be more interesting, I guess, but I guess it would be more confusing that, No Mercy was Raw last year. Now it's SmackDown. And I guess I'm still confused with it because I remember No Mercy being a SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view. And I guess that goes back into the conversation we were just having, where they choose to acknowledge some things and choose to not acknowledge some things, where Byron Saxton was saying that Clash of Champions is going to be the first ever exclusive Raw pay-per-view.
Yes.
So there's my point, exactly. That no, there was Backlash, New Year's Revolution, Unforgiven. I don't know.
You're on your own on
fill
that
in
one.
The rest.
You're on your own on that one, Joel. I'm not. I'd have to look it up, but it does ring true what you're saying. But I wouldn't have been able to come up with a long list of all the Raw exclusives. But it is a strange time in 2016 that they are trying to celebrate their history in some ways. The Eddie Gilbert. The Hispanic mm-hmm. Heritage videos and Hall and Nash in the Jay Legends with JBL, and yet at the same time there's this kind of selective history when it comes to their championships. Fans care about that stuff. I care about that stuff. I mean, I most people mm-hmm. who were fans growing up sat down in class and were bored and jotted down in their notes in junior high and high school, you know, here's a championship history. Here's who I want to hold the title next. I know I did plenty of that. I don't know. Maybe in school today, kids are just mm-hmm. playing games on their smartphones in class under the desk or something. I'm far enough removed.
Oh no, I did that too. Wait.
Yeah. So
that was only 10 years ago and I was doing that.
Yes, exactly. So come on, you know, WWE, let's keep the championships, the belts cool. Let's keep the history accurate. And same thing with the pay-per-views. All right, Let's go next, as promised, to 915 and then on deck 781. 915, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey guys, this is Chris from Maryland.
Hey Chris, thanks for calling. What have you got for Joel and me?
Two things. Was it me or was there too much Foley tonight? Like way, way too much Foley.
Completely agree.
And the second thing is, I understand why they did that finish, but I don't think that your top champion in your brand should be losing a match in his third week as champion. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about
that.
But that's all I got.
Cool, thanks. No, two good topics. Joel, too much Mick Foley or just enough or what? What's your take?
Too much. I mean, he's on the show too much, and all you see is that Holy Foley poster in the background, and that's what they want you to do. They have Mick on the program specifically so that you will watch the Holy Foley show, and I can tell you I'm not going to watch that show. It's just getting to be too much. He's too much on the show, and that's my problem, is there's too much authority figure all over the place. Raw, SmackDown, Lucha Underground, they're everywhere. The show is about the wrestlers, not the authority figures.
I will say that I have a longer leash for Mick Foley or a higher tolerance for him in this role than I've had for him in other roles over the last 15 years. And I am one who generally defaults to less authority figures. Less authority figure time is better. I have to say, and I'm surprising myself with this, given my history, both with Mick Foley at times and for sure authority figures, it didn't jump out to me that it was too much on this show. It was a lot, but I felt that that 6 days before a pay-per-view, and we can complain about that they're still deciding matches for a pay-per-view 6 days beforehand, but with the frequency of pay-per-views, that's going to be the reality. He was actually serving a purpose in every segment. I was okay with the quantity of Foley, but I will caveat it with this. That has to be the highest amount of time and frequency that we see him ever. And he shouldn't approach that very often. You know, every 6 to 8 weeks, maybe there's a show, maybe, where he's on that much. And again, I'm sort of stipulating to the Raw format. I mean, my choice would be a William Regal role as an authority figure, which is weeks go by and you don't see him. Or maybe it's a brief comment about something very important. That's my default. That's what I would do. But stipulating to the reality of the Raw format and how the show operates, I mean, I don't want to complain about there being too many police in a police procedural. And WWE, or too many lawyers and judges in a legal procedural on CBS. It's just, that's what Raw is. It is an authority figure show. So in that context, Foley is a breath of fresh air because he's nice, he's entertaining, he has the best interests of sportsmanship in mind, and he has a credible history with fans. He's not a son or daughter of the promoter or playing a sleaze bucket, you know, GM, where you're like, why would I support a brand that employs this person who's doing all these terrible things that I don't like? So there's a lot of things I like about the babyface authority figure, and I think Mick Foley is doing a good job with it. I did enjoy his talking about, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog, and he was like kind of stumbled over his words, but I think he got it right, and he kind of lost the crowd, and then he kind of looked at him like, hey, I got it right, didn't I? And it's like, it wasn't so much that people were saying he was wrong as much as they lost track of what he was saying because he stumbled over it. But I like Mick. It was like a real moment. You know, so much of Raw feels scripted, and that felt like a real moment, Joel. That little bit there. I do want to address the Cruiserweight championship, or the introduction, excuse me, of the Cruiserweight division for sure next. But when I say next, I mean after Chris's other question. And that is Kevin Owens losing in his third week as champion. I think losing in a cage match by having your opponent fall onto the floor is such a stupid way to win and such a stupid way to lose that I don't think it's that big of a deal. I would have absolutely had a problem, as Chris from Maryland did, if Owens got pinned or tapped out. I have more wiggle room when it comes to losing a stupid cage match rule, you know, via the stupid cage match rule of the first person to flee the scene of the fight is the winner. It's like the person who runs away the most effectively from a fight is your winner. It's imagine UFC. You know, the winner isn't the first one to make your opponent tap out or knock him out. It's if you can run away as fast as you can, faster than he can, and get out. I mean, it's a dumb rule to begin with. But Joel, your thoughts?
Well, I hate cage matches today. I hate that you are able to escape the cage. No, it should be two guys who are locked in a cage. Nobody else is climbing over the top. Nobody's coming in. It's two guys, and no one can escape. You know, it's pinfall or submission. You know, and I just do not like how guys are able to, that the first thing that happens in the match is always the heel runs for the door, and the babyface grabs them, you know, and they always have this struggle towards the end of people trying to climb out. But I agree with you. It's kind of a fluky victory for Roman Reigns just because it's such a stupid gimmick, such a stupid match. But, you know, I would protect Owens a little bit more than they have. But, you know, the psychology is that, you know, Roman Reigns beat Kevin Owens in a cage match. Imagine if the title was on the line, you know, then they would hope, WWE to hope that people would want to see him win the title. But I think that 90% of the crowd does not want to see him win the title.
Yes. All right, we're going to go to our bottom of the hour break, although with how long Raw ran, it's not exactly bottom of the hour right now, but for all intents and purposes, we'll call it the bottom of the hour break. When we come back, I want to talk to Joel Dennell, my co-host today, about the introduction of the Cruiserweight division on Raw tonight, and then we'll take more of your phone calls. 515-605-9345. We'll be back right after this. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. I was trying to figure out why Jay Cutler was trending on Twitter during the commercial break, and I saw him walk past a referee and get the helmet knocked off his head. I don't even know if that was going on tonight. I wasn't paying attention to who was playing on Monday Night Football tonight, but that made me chuckle. Joel, fellow Viking fan, what did you think of Sam Bradford yesterday?
Yeah, he got the job done. I mean, in the first time, you know, a lot of people are freaking out about the Adrian Peterson injury, which what I'm hearing now is not as serious as they thought it would be. That he may require surgery and be out for about a month, unless you're hearing any differently.
Nope.
But what's cool about this is for the first time in a long time, we're a passing team. We've been a running team for a long, long time, except for when we had Brett Favre for a year and I don't know how many games, half a season maybe. We were a passing team, but for the first time in a long time, the Vikings are a passing team. They do not need to rely on the run every single time. And now that gives us much more options because we do have two guys in the back, Matt Asiata and Jared McKinnon, who are both quality runners, and we're able to pass to a couple of receivers that are becoming really big stars. Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen's coming into his own. We haven't even seen Treadwell what he can do yet, but I mean, we have a good core of offense that gives us a lot of options so that we're not just known as the defensive team with the running back.
Spoken like a KFAN intern. Very, very well done. You remind me on audio of AP Sports Guy. You've got kind of a you sound a bit,
sure,
a little bit like AP Sports Guy here in Minnesota, frequent guest of the Dan Barrero show I listen to. So, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time with those guys. So, when I was at KFAN, that was an interesting time in my life.
We'll talk about that someday. We'll compare notes. I spent a couple years there too.
Okay, we'll do that.
With Pro Wrestling Focus, absolutely. All right, let's go. Oh, let's go to my topic about the Cruiserweight. In the introduction of the Cruiserweight division on Raw, Mauro Ranallo, I mean, was practically distraught last Wednesday night, Joel, talking about how the Cruiserweights are going to Raw. I wish they were going to stay on SmackDown. Corey Graves assuring him, Mauro, we're going to do good by the cruiserweights. I know you've got an attachment to this brand. And Morrow and Daniel Bryan were lamenting it being in the hands of Byron Saxton and Michael Cole, although they couldn't quite overtly say that. They just played it up as brand rivalry. I got to say, they pretty much, as people observed on Twitter an hour or so ago when this segment was going on, pretty much did everything I said that WWE should not do when introducing the cruiserweights. I'm not saying that it can't still work. I'm not saying that it's not going to be exciting, that it won't be a good addition to Raw. It's not binary. It's not either it totally sucks and it's ruined or it's great because they did it exactly the way that I wanted. But they did talk a lot about, you know, well, they might be small, but they've got heart. And, well, they might not be big and tough, but they're exciting and entertaining. And there's nothing that they like to do more than entertain. And I was just like, it just sounded like...
What does that sound like?
It sounded like Vince McMahon feeding lions through a headset is what it sounded like. Your thoughts? I mean, I don't want to...
Or the X Division.
Totally. I could go on. I was trying not to because I want to give you a chance to give your thoughts and not poison the water too much. But, yeah, and then the first match is a four-way. I give them credit that at least Brian Kendrick, I guess, went heel. I shouldn't even say I guess. He was, you know, using sneaky heel tactics the whole time to set up him as a heel against TJ Perkins on Sunday at the Clash. Yeah, Joel, I'll have more to say about it, but your thoughts, the pros and cons of what they did tonight all around as a presentation.
I guess I should say this first, that I, like a lot of other people, hate fatal four ways and I hate triple threats, but all these guys were got to be featured prominently in a match. That this is a really interesting time on Raw that a lot of people are being exposed to this kind of wrestling for the first time. A lot of the casual viewers have not seen the Cruiserweight Classic. They don't watch New Japan. They don't watch ROH, and they're seeing a high work rate from these guys in the ring. And that's going to be something that's really cool to see if that really catches on with the mainstream fans. That being said, I think that the way that it was presented could have been handled a lot better. I didn't like that it was just the impromptu fatal four-way match, you know, just the typical, we're all out here, so now let's just have a match together, like you saw with the tag team match. What I would have liked is that at the beginning of the show, top of the hour, first thing that happens is you can have Mick Foley or preferably somebody else, maybe Corey Graves can come out to the ring, you know, talk about this is the Cruiserweight Classic, that these guys participated in a historic tournament. And we're going to have two matches here. You can do Grand Metalik versus Brian Kendrick, you know, as one match. Then we'll have a second match. And then later on in Raw, we'll have a third match, and that will be the number one contender. That way, all these guys get to be featured in singles matches, showing off all their moves and their personalities and their ring entrances. And then it kind of culminates into something that is really important in a dramatic one-fall match between two guys. That's how I would have handled it.
Yep.
But I guess I am happy that all of them, you know, they all got to showcase, you know, their high-flying moves, what the Cruiserweight is about, is by having a high work rate of matches. So that was cool. I guess I wasn't so surprised that they went with Brian Kendrick, the guy that most people would be familiar with. I was kind of hoping to see if it would go in a different direction. But I guess, yeah, that Brian Kendrick went heel in the match, and he's the guy that most people would be familiar with, so that's who they're going to run with to fight TJ Perkins. But I was surprised that we didn't see any TJ Perkins. Do you know why or any reason why that could have been?
No, because that was my next question, is did I miss, like, fast-forwarding through a commercial break, and I didn't push play fast enough where they introduced us to the guy who won the freaking tournament, who's going to be defending the championship. How do you introduce a division? And they did a nice job with the little video profiles. Nice, not great, but nice job with the video profiles of the different competitors.
Sure.
But how do you not introduce us to the guy who won the tournament? It's just dumb. It's flabbergasting. It's dumbfounding. It's some other three, four-syllable adjective. It's just
ridiculous.
I was shaking my head. I mean, I mean, again, I'm trying to hold off on my rant until the Wade Keller hotline because that's what VIP members are waiting for when I go through the whole show in order and talk about this stuff point by point. I'll be doing that later. If you want to be a VIP member, go to pwtorch.com/goVIP. On that page, there's a link with a bunch of testimonials from VIP members saying why they choose to pay for that top tier of wrestling coverage, along with nearly three decades of archives of insider information and newsletters. And tons of new audio and ad-free versions of this show, by the way, with sound optimized, as our caller earlier said. Everything that comes with it. You can see all the testimonials and the bullet points on that, and we'd love to have you as a member, pwtorch.com/goVIP. All right, with that slipped in there, I am going to, just to avoid going on a longer rant, because we have so many people on hold, I'm going to go back to the phone lines, but I do want to hear what you guys thought of the Cruiserweight division. So feel free to give us a call if you haven't yet, 515-605-9345. I haven't checked the inbox. Usually we just have so many phone calls and so much to talk about. I have not been going to the inbox during Raw and SmackDown post shows. I usually spend some time doing that before Wednesday's midweek show, 1 Eastern on Wednesday. So, but I might look at email before the show ends today, and so feel free also to send in an email to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. And by the way, just another side note to the side note, welcome all of our new listeners. We're doing record numbers on our listenership, and Raw ratings might be going down, but our listenership continues to climb, and I really appreciate our longtime listeners, of course, but I very much welcome the new listeners who are discovering us. And appreciate our approach to covering wrestling here at the Livecast with our whole team. And we're here 6 days a week. Bruce Pritchard, scheduled to be Jim Valley's guest on Saturday Morning Wrestling. He returns after a couple weeks away on a wonderful-looking vacation based on his Facebook pictures. And Jim Valley is back. Hopefully Bruce Pritchard will be on the show. He and Bruce Mitchell have been going at it back and forth over the 1997 Survivor Series finish with Bret Hart. Things have gotten a little heated. Some friendships have been damaged in this one. So hopefully Bruce does follow through and appears with Jim, and I think he will, and it should be a good show. So that's coming up on this coming Saturday morning. All right, back to the phone lines. Let's talk Raw, Cruiserweights, and more. And I believe I said 781 was next. So if so, here you are. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Mike from Boston. Wade and Phil, how are you guys doing tonight?
Very good. Thanks, Mike.
I'm doing great. How are you?
Guys? Great. Hey, Wade, I know you want to save your rant for Wednesday. Allow me to rant for you. Some nights Raw is fantastic. Some nights it's a chore. And tonight was a chore to sit through this. So many little things in the presentation that could have made it an entertaining show. It made it go wrong. The Cruiserweight introduction, I thought, was just really botched. Instead of you have four guys out in the ring, and instead of having Mick Foley just talk about how great they are, you could have maybe, I don't know, shown some of the vignettes that you've been showing during the Cruiserweight Classic that actually let these guys talk in their own words, show a little bit of personality, and give the audience a reason to care about them. Instead, you have Mick just trying to put them over on his own by saying, like, they're going to do the flippy moves that people sometimes like.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know anything about them. I think we're about two. I'm putting the over-under on 2 weeks before Michael Cole, or you know what? Byron Saxton calls Cedric Alexander Cedric the Sports Entertainer. Okay? That's where we're going with this right now. I thought it was really odd in terms of just placement, that right after you have a segment early on talking about Hispanic Heritage Month, to go to a Braun Strowman Sin Cara squash match. That was really weird to me in terms of placement. Maybe I'm the only one who thought that, but you know, it made me think that the next thing they're going to do is give Cesaro a fake mustache. What happened would be, you know, Cesaro Chavez. I think that's how Vince thinks at this point. You had Jericho in the ring doing what I thought was going to be a money promo. I was really looking forward to it. And then you have, like, this big schmoz. And, like, I don't know. I'm at the point where I'm a little bit over Enzo doing the same thing every week. He's hitting that road dog level of, I used to really like you, and now you're really annoying me, and he's only about 2 or 3 months into this. And you know what? Rather than how do you, you know, I know you go to a commercial segment, but you have like 10 guys beating the heck out of one another in the ring, and then you have like a nice 5-on-5 tag match. How do you get from like, how do you pull apart? Do you just like have William Regal come out very in a polite British way, say, enough of this, gentlemen, let's settle this like men? Why not just have like a 15-minute pull apart brawl? Do something exciting for a change, as opposed to the same old, like do something different. You're bleeding viewers right now. You have Monday night football really cutting into it. It seems really stale. Try something different. See, now this is where Vince was usually at his best when things were going really bad. So now let's not be afraid to do some new things right now, or at least make it entertaining. If we're going to stink, let's stink and be entertaining. And there was just so many segments tonight that seem like Bayley's, it's now, I hate triple threat matches. Bayley is now in the women's title match just because, just, you know, I just throw her in. So if you missed Raw tonight, you're going to tune in on Sunday and you're just going to be like, well, why is Bayley in this match all of a sudden? And why are they so hell-bent on putting every single woman who are all very talented in every single championship match rather than let feuds build and build programs over time? It's like they have to get it. It's like, look, they're not going anywhere. Like, these ladies will be around for a long time. Give them time to build up.
Yes.
Rather than throw them in, every single championship match has to be just like it put as many people in as possible, and it detracts from everything. It's just terrible. Tonight was awful. It was like, it was Diesel. It was 1995 Diesel is your champ levels of terrible for Raw tonight.
Mike, thank you. Thanks for your long string of, I would say, valid complaints about this show.
I would agree with you on that, so that was good.
Yes, that was really good. Now you know how I get just carried away sometimes. People are like, how does he talk so much, so long? Take a breath. And it's like, we got stuff to talk about after these shows. And when you're passionate about it, I mean,
people love it.
Absolutely. And that's a thing. You know, I mean, and there are as Damian Sandow, I think, said, the unwashed masses, you know, the uninitiated masses hear us talk about it, and they're like, how can you do a wrestling show or a pro wrestling talk show and crap on the product so much? They just hate. It's negative. It's like, there's nothing negative about pointing out problems with the product that has led to a rating for Raw going from 2.4 to 1.8 something from one September to another. This is, it would be one thing to be complaining if ratings were going up and we ran online polls on PWTorch.com and people were giving it 8s, 9s, and 10s, and I'm on here going, oh, back in the 70s, it was way better. And, you know, and giving these shows a 2 and a, you know, a 1 or a 2 score because I was out of touch. The complaining about Raw, as Mike from Boston just did, with actual points, where your purpose is to say, this is what would make the show better and more successful. The wrestlers would make more money. Pro wrestling would be less scorned in the mainstream. The advertisers would flock to advertise on the show, not have to be talked into it with a bunch of charity PR stuff. So people who love pro wrestling and know when it can be good complain. It's like Lucha Underground. You know, there's a lot about that show that's great. I remember there's a lot that I've complimented about that show, but I remember Krista Joseph, executive producer, being on the show, and I haven't gotten over it. We talked about the stiff chair shots to the head a couple years back, and he defended it. He's like, you know, the wrestlers, they all, and he was kind of defensive sounding about it, you know, and I don't know if that means he felt like he was pressured to cover for it, but he didn't agree. I didn't talk to him off air about it or get any feeling in that way, but he was like, well, you know, these guys know what they're getting into and they protect each other. And it's like, no, it's 2014 at that point or whatever year it was exactly. And no, we shouldn't be doing unprotected chair shots to the head. And in your rant recent, you know, about, you know, all these just tons of high spots and violence and blood and no long-term selling, there's one big spot after another. It's like Wrestle Society X meets the worst of ECW meets the pioneering Joel Goodhart Tri-State Wrestling Alliance back in the early 90s, and it's 2016. That stuff doesn't work. We know better, and calling them out on it is not being negative about wrestling. It's being positive about the way wrestling should be and understanding sometimes decision makers make bad decisions. Joel.
If you want to talk about that main event from Lucha Underground, that's just straight up garbage wrestling.
Yep.
That's just garbage.
Yep.
I mean, in 2016, to do chair shots to the head, don't make excuses to me. If you have Chris DeJoseph come on again and try and defend that, like, there's no way you can defend that. I mean, with how much we know, and to do stuff like those stupid chair shots to the head, I mean, it's dumb. Why do you do it? It benefits nobody. Nobody cares. With those high spots on Lucha Underground, they're doing all this crazy stuff, hitting their heads into cement walls, doing all this stuff, and nobody cares. You know, the week after, it's just the people in the audience are saying, this is awesome. Holy crap, this is amazing. What we're seeing right now, two guys just tear each other's bodies apart so that in 20 years they're going to have a difficult time walking. Like, okay, but that benefits nothing. Nothing. I mean, it's not going to increase viewership or anything. It's stupid. And I think there's still a segment of the audience out there who craves that 90s, you know, garbage wrestling, jumping off, you know, 30 feet in the air through four tables, you know, and bleeding from the head with barbed wire and all this crazy stuff. I think there's some people who still want it, but does the cost outweigh the benefits? You know, no. I mean, there's so much that they're giving up by having these guys do all this crazy stuff. No selling. I mean, if these guys did, you know, built up to a spot and then it was sold, like, oh my God, that was a huge moment in Lucha Underground that this happened, you know, and it really meant something. Yep. And then this guy, you didn't see him for a couple weeks, it would mean something. But because you just saw Killshot and Marty the Moth go through this, you know, this big match, this warfare, whatever they called it, and they did all this crazy stuff, jumping off all this stuff, bleeding, going through tables, going through ladders, jumping off ladders, knocking people off ladders, all this stuff, and then we're going to see them next week or the week after, you know, like, you know, it's warfare. It's what we do. We fight. It's violence, you know, and that's, and part of the problem is that the network they're on is El Rey. And El Rey's programming is that grindhouse, Robert Rodriguez, you know, if you've seen like Planet Terror, where it's this over the top violence and blood and all this crazy stuff. And that's kind of like what they want for Lucha Underground, is this crazy violent stuff. And maybe it's the network that they don't realize that, like, hey, you can't be doing this to people. They are actually in a match. This affects people. This is not fake blood. We don't have a stuntman with crash pads.
And I would argue, Joel, too, on that specific point, if it was a computer simulation of wrestling, it would still be crap, even if there was nobody really getting hurt because of what you said, the lack of long-term selling, even if these weren't real human beings. And that is the top issue. But there are people who just don't care. They're like, they're grown men. If they want to do it and they want to end up with problems with their brain and function and their bodies later in life, they know what they're getting into. And there are people on that scale who really think, hey, let rock stars go live the rock star lifestyle. And if you can be a rock star for 5 years, it's better than most people's lives, you know, living to 100. Okay, let's set that whole thing aside. And the idea that, hey, maybe there's some rich people in the ivory tower exploiting them, getting rich off of their bodily sacrifice. But it's the inefficiency of it and the numbness of the viewer when you do too much of that stuff. And I want to wind this back to the Cruiserweight Classic. That's part of my problem with Triple Threat and Fatal 4-Way matches with Cruiserweights. I gave this impassioned plea for WWE, a checklist of things not to do on the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members a few days ago. And one of them was, stop talking about how exciting they are. That is self-evident. It's like telling the score if you're a sportscaster on television. You don't do it anymore. I think they even went too far in that direction, to be honest. But I think it's okay every once in a while. Go, it's 97-95 with 2 minutes left. You don't just have to assume everyone is staring at the TV screen. Sometimes I'm in the other room listening. But that's a whole other sports rant for another day, and a minor one. But you don't need to tell us how exciting it is. It is self-evident that it's exciting. It's different. Mm-hmm. And so you can, every once in a while, make reference to it, but I sort of think you just want the wrestlers to show it and not make it seem like that's a selling point. Get over the personalities, get over the rivalries, get over the prestige of what they're fighting for, and let them do their thing. You know, USC doesn't have to talk about Conor McGregor and, oh, he's so exciting because he's small and he's got heart and he's spent his whole life walking around looking up at people who were successful, and now he's trying to carve out a niche for himself on the mid-card of UFC. That's not what they did, because it would be stupid to do it. And so WWE messed it up. They did everything that, as you said, the TNA's done wrong with the X Division, didn't learn any lessons from it, and I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed. I wouldn't even, I mean, as much as the Cruiserweight Classic has been great, I think that they're, and they told some great stories, I think that there were times that they also talked too much about how exciting these moves are. And it's like, no, the moves are there to win. The moves are being executed to win matches, not to entertain. They happen to be entertaining. Everybody who watches knows they're entertaining. And guess what? You don't need to tell us that exciting athletic displays by these wrestlers is entertaining or exciting. You don't need to tell us that. We'll pick up on that, believe it or not, watching. Instead, call the moves by name and put it in the context of what they're fighting for and that it matters. And, oh, yeah, get us interested in the rivalries. You know, I mean, Michael Johnson on Fight Night on Fox Sports 1 on Saturday night got himself over with his passion. He went too far. He started swearing at Dustin Poirier after he knocked him out and got in his face. And Dustin's trying to regain his senses. And Michael Johnson saying, F you, and getting on his case. And goes to his corner and says, F him. And all of a sudden, he turns heel. And then he later apologizes. Oh, things got out of hand. I was too worked up. Like, there's real stories you can tell that feel authentic that aren't about the black guy dancing his way to the ring because he likes to entertain people. He's dancing before the bell rings. Then he's doing fancy moves. And then he's going to smile. And it's just like every cliche, everything that they could do wrong, they did. They're not learning about mistakes that were made in the past in their own industry and how people get over in UFC regardless of their size. Okay. Here's another rant, Joel. go ahead.
I mean, you got to realize it's still Vince McMahon who's running the show.
Yeah.
Triple H is not running Monday Night Raw. It is still Vince McMahon, and he still has a bit stigma towards guys who are under 6'2". Okay. And that's not going to change at this point in his life. It is never going to change, and people have to realize that. Until he is no longer in power, he is still going to view guys who are shorter than 6'2" are just quick and exciting, and they're small, but they got a lot of heart, and you know they're just fighting their hearts out to entertain the fans. Okay, that's the only thing he's going to view it as, and that is never ever going to change. But what Vince McMahon doesn't realize is that what you just explained at UFC is wrestling booking 101.
Yep.
It's just 101. It is the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Wade, you watched the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday night. How excited were you to see the Minnesota Vikings beat the Green Bay Packers? It was probably the most amazing thing you had seen in a long time, as far as you getting so invested and excited.
Well, I did see Shinsuke Nakamura for the first time in person in my life 4 hours earlier. But yes, it
true.
Was. But for the sake of your example, it was thrilling because the outcome mattered. There was a history to the rivalry. And I didn't need the announcers telling me over and over again how exciting NFL football is. It was about having a stake and an investment in who won and a history that was acknowledged throughout and consistently with wins and losses in the past mattering and being tracked. There's a set of rules. They are followed, and may the best team win. And when your team wins, you're thrilled. And it's such a simple framework and foundation. It doesn't have to be as difficult as they make it. Joel, do you want to follow up on that? Or were you, when you threw to me?
No, it's just, you know, it's such simple booking that honestly booking a wrestling show should be really easy. Like, it should not be hard. You get over the personalities. Wrestling is driven by stars and rivalries and getting invested in people and paying to see them win. And I don't understand how they don't understand that part about that. All of television, if they want to be like every other television program, okay, all television shows are based upon the characters. All about the characters. Now, the story is secondary in television. It's about getting your characters over and getting people in so invested in those characters that they tune in every single week to watch those people and watch their journey, watch their arc. Do they turn to and watch the decisions that they make or that they don't make? And they're having a difficult time doing that. They're just, you know, it's just kind of these guys who are out there, and, you know, we all work under the corporation of WWE, and, you know, we're just kind of out there doing matches. Okay, Mick, I guess we're going to have an 8-man tag. I guess that's pretty cool, but the outcome doesn't matter, and nobody cares, and I don't even remember who won. You know?
Let me transition that into the what Mike from Boston said about Enzo. Is he getting into – is he – you know, people are now starting to say he's a little too much Scotty Too Hotty meets Diamond Dallas Page meets Road Dogg, and the aspects of all three that either limited them or irritated people. This gets to what you're saying. Enzo doesn't have a goal in life. He just comes out red-faced, eyes bulging, and talking smack. And that's, like, a good thing to have as an ingredient as a wrestler – but at some point, it's been my word of the year, journey. He's got to be on a journey. There's got to be a purpose. What is his purpose, and what does winning or losing or settling a grudge have to do with that journey? As it, either you're moving forward in that journey or it's a setback. Dustin Poirier, again, on Saturday, he was talking about Eddie Alvarez. He was, I'm going to go through Johnson, and then it's going to be Eddie time. And he got a huge setback. Mm-hmm. And now he's got to go on a winning streak again and win two or three in a row to maybe get that title shot again. Huge setback. It set him back years and hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe $1 million back in that loss. And Johnson was going from maybe being on the bubble to getting cut to now he's like, give me a big money match. I know what Diaz and McGregor are making. It's about the journey. It's about wins and losses mattering. The problem with Enzo is, and I think where people are kind of losing a little investment in him right now, is they don't know what his purpose is. They don't know what he is there doing other than, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the Road Dogg bet. So I do think he's at risk there, and I would like to see them come up with some purpose for his existence now other than, you know, bug-eyed rant, talking smack, which is entertaining, but it gets redundant.
Yeah, I mean, like if I were to bring it back to talking about because they want to be like every other television show. That's their goal. They want to be like a television program. So everyone has a goal. They have wants. What do they want? Well, the goal of a lot of people, including Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, they all want the WWE Championship. Okay, that's clear. That's what they want. What does Enzo want? He has not made that clear. He doesn't know. He has never explicitly said that. He's just kind of the guy who goes out there with big cast, and their purpose out there is to get the audience engagement. It's for them to say the lines with them, to get the audience back engaged, draw them back in to say their bit with them. You know, and that's only going to go on for so long. And that was my biggest concern, was when those guys were doing that in NXT at Full Sail, that was really over. Everyone was saying their bit. And I was wondering, is that going to transfer over to the big stage on Raw? And I had some questions. I didn't know if that was really going to work. And we've kind of seen that, yeah, you have the bellwether fans who watch NXT every week. They go to all the shows. They, you know, they're following wrestling in depth. They watch New Japan, and they know the bit. They know all the bits from NXT. And so they're the first ones to say that at all the wrestling shows. And everyone else, you know, they kind of catch on to it. And then, you know, everyone starts doing their bit. And now I think it's getting a little tired out because it's like we see this every single week. It's the same thing, you know, going through their tag match and it doesn't mean anything. Now we need to see the journey that Enzo and Big Cass go on. They need to make it clear we want the tag team championship or, you know, whatever it is that they want to do. They need to have the message and make it clear.
100%. 100%. All right, let's go to 917 next. Thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, how's it going? This is Doug from New York City.
Hey, Doug, thanks for calling. Where in New York City are you?
I'm in Brooklyn. Cool. Prospect Reference, yeah.
Awesome.
But, yeah, big fan of the show. I actually found myself most interested tonight in sort of the treatment of Seth Rollins throughout the show.
Yeah.
Of his character kind of transitioning. I actually, even though the finish was kind of dumb, I thought his match with Rusev was a pretty solid match overall, and kind of Rusev did a great job helping him turn the corner to become more of an obvious babyface. So I just wanted to get your thoughts. The end of the show seemed to position Rollins more as like somebody who could continue the Roman Reigns experiment, like get him over by association, kind of like what they tried to do with Dean Ambrose. But I'm just wondering if you think, you know, they heard the strong reaction to what Rollins was doing tonight and maybe would consider positioning him as a centerpiece, or is he more of like ultimately going to become another buddy in the Roman Reigns experiment?
It is the topic. I mean, we can talk about the Cruiserweight division and many other things from Raw tonight, Doug. But Joel, I am hoping, this is a best case scenario, that they will listen to the crowd and they will hear that Seth is over, and having Seth and Roman Reigns team together and be aligned will lead to Roman Reigns turning heel on Seth. Because if Seth Rollins is able to get back to where he was in New Jersey in May at Extreme Rules, if he's able to get back to that point with a crowd response, he will be getting a big, better crowd response than anybody since Daniel Bryan. And that, having Roman Reigns get upset about that. I mean, if Roman and Seth come out, Joel, and the crowd cheers Seth, boos Roman, cheers Seth, boos Roman, the natural storyline is for Roman to get upset about it, get jealous, get pissed off at the fans, and turn. And if the only reason Roman hasn't turned yet is Vince is waiting for the right time and the right opportunity for it to really pay off, not just with a Roman turn, but to have that perfect babyface to go against, maybe Seth is that perfect babyface. That's the positive of what we saw at the end of Raw tonight. The negative is Doug's suggestion that, well, maybe it's they're going to use Seth to try to get Roman over. I think I know what you want to see, but where do you think Vince's mindset is right now? Your best guess on whether it's even something he's flirting with in his mind, that they can use Seth turning babyface to somewhere down the line have Roman turn heel on him.
I think it's a lot of the wait and see attitude. I don't think that Vince has really made a determination one way or the other right now. I think for at the moment, it's just trying to get Roman over by association. But as you laid out, that would be the perfect scenario, was that everybody's cheering Rollins, they're booing Reigns. Reigns gets all upset, but I don't know if they still want to go in that, if they want to turn Roman Reigns heel yet. I don't know if they're ready to do that. And what makes me hesitant is that I don't think they are going to do that until they see a clear plan B for someone else to be the next big star babyface. I don't think that they're just going to turn Roman Reigns for a year and then go back to Roman Reigns as being the top babyface. I don't see that happening.
Well,
I think that they're all in.
I hope that they I hope they go all in on Seth. I mean, I hope they see Seth as that potential centerpiece babyface. I mean, the moves he does, you know, when you see him in the context of a babyface, in terms of his moveset, it seems crazy he was ever a heel. I mean, he's diving through the ropes and running, scaling the cage and leaping off the top. And I mean, he's athletic, and you want to cheer that level of gritty athleticism. It's not soft athleticism. It's not showboat athleticism. It really is. It's not like, I mean, he's out there doing moves that look like they're going to help him win a match, but they're babyface moves. You admire the athleticism. I hope that they at least are looking at Seth as possibly that heir apparent to John Cena. He's young enough where you can look at him that way. You know, AJ Styles really isn't. You know, even Shinsuke Nakamura is not. Shinsuke is a bridge as a centerpiece babyface who I'd like to see them call up to the main roster. But, I hope that's the case. All right, with just a couple minutes left in the show, I want to take one more call, and then I want to close out, Joel, talking with you about our NXT Live experience, speaking of Shinsuke. We might get to more than one call, but for sure one more. Let's go to 434. I believe this is Virginia. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Keith from Virginia.
Hey, Keith, thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
Two things real quick. Seth Rollins is he's getting cheered more, and that's a good thing, but I'm still not totally buying into the whole story behind him going face. I mean, you know, he's still backstage with Stephanie. Like, just, why did you let me down? Well, why wasn't I the guy? And I'm like, that's not heroic. That's still him kind of pining away for the old days. Like, mm-hmm. I still don't find anything he's doing heroic. He came out and saved Roman, but it's only because of his, you know, his own anger, not because of a heroic thing. But anyway.
Nope.
And my second thing.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yep.
My second thing was bringing it back to what you guys were talking about and, you know, creating a journey with a storyline and highlighting the competition aspects and you know, playing it straight like a sport. I can provide a counterpoint to that. It's not how I feel personally, but I have a friend that comes over and, you know, watches wrestling casually. And he's about my age, late 30s, and this may be the person that they're trying to chase down. He cannot stand it when they try to inject reality into it. One of his least favorite angles was the whole thing with Orton and Lesnar at the last pay-per-view they were at. When he started laying in those shots, he got upset. He was like, he loves UFC. He was like, I don't want reality in my wrestling. I like outlandish characters doing crazy stuff and promos and cool moves. I can't stand, you know, when they keep track of wins. I think he's the kind of person that they're chasing down. And what do you guys think of that?
Sure.
Thanks.
You bet. Well, first I'll say there's a lot of people who watch wrestling for a lot of different reasons. And I do believe that everything that Keith's friend wants in wrestling, outlandish characters, not watching guys really hit each other and get hardway blood or give each other concussions for real in order to try to make it seem real, or making it seem real through mixing real-life happenings and characters with the on-air narrative fictional storyline, I'm kind of with him on all that stuff. I want outlandish characters. That's what drew me into wrestling in the first place. It's flipping channels and seeing Jesse the Body Ventura with his boa standing next to Adrian Adonis with a Brooklyn leather jacket on, and Mad Dog Vachon building a casket for Crusher Jerry Blackwell, and Baron Von Raschke and the Claw. And then you had kind of the control group in the experiment, so to speak, the normal Vern Gagne. Nice, soft-spoken guy. The High Flyers, Greg Gagne, Jim Brunzel, trying to take on these outlandish characters, Bobby Duncombe and all that. That was the AWA. They were known for their promos, their outlandish characters, and great interviews, and obviously a sense of realism that came with wrestling at that time. And so the wrestling that I think draws the most money includes outlandish characters. It does. And it doesn't include injecting reality into it. I think this idea of, to me, just tell me a good story.
90 seconds.
If it happens to parallel reality, so be it. I mean, I wouldn't even call it a bonus. It's just a coincidence. It's just, it happens to be close to reality. You're not going to convince people pro wrestling is real. That's not going to happen. And I don't even think it, I think it just, if you can come up with a really sensible storyline that involves something that's real, that's fine. But I have yet to see that succeed very often. I mean, it's just rare that you should just tell the best story you can tell within the confines of the show that you're watching. Just tell a good story. And don't worry about whether it's real or not, because no one's ever going to believe it's real. So I'm actually very close to what Keith's friend is at, other than tracking wins and losses. I mean, I think you have to have, for people to be invested in a match, as opposed to just getting off on seeing moves, you got to have a sense that if somebody wins or somebody loses, it's going to matter. And I mean, I pointed to, you know, it's in part because of the timeliness of it, but the Dustin Poirier versus Michael Johnson match on Saturday was a perfect example of it. A guy on a winning streak against a guy with a losing streak. The underdog on the losing streak won and then staked his flag in the ground and said, I want a title shot. I want big money. He showed personality. He showed drive. He was a jerk who then repented. All this stuff, that's a story pro wrestling can tell, but they can manufacture it. They can tell it without it having to be actually real. They can actually manufacture it. They have more control over that than USC promoters do. So
they
just
do it better.
They should do it better because they have control. They should emulate the great stories being told in real life in sports. Joel, your thoughts on that, and then the Keith said about Seth Rollins also.
Yeah, I mean, that wrestling is all about these outlandish characters, you know, fighting each other. And, you know, that is what it's all about. And but you really can't have it where wins and losses don't count. Otherwise, you know, then you should just be watching main event superstars and all the pre-shows. because none of that stuff matters, who wins or loses. But, yeah, I mean, you don't need to interject realism and try to get people to convince them that this is actually real stuff, because you're not going to convince anybody to really do that. It's very rare that you would get them to question whether or not something is real or not. The last thing I can remember people actually questioning was the one I brought up earlier in the live cast, was the CM Punk interview. It was the last time I can remember people were questioning whether or not this was real. And you can only do that, you know, once every, I don't know, 5-10 years, something like that. You know, some big angle where you get people to actually question about it.
Yeah, Joey Styles.
Because otherwise, you're just
going
to pull people out of it.
The other would be Joey Styles, you know, where he said some things in that microphone establishing ECW brand just over 10 years ago. Another example of it. Yeah, I think you can. It's about once every 5 years, and maybe to do it really effectively, even longer between them. Yeah, go ahead. I just want to interject. There's another example of where people were left wondering.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying, is that these things, you can't just keep hot-shotting them, you know, once every month, once a year or something like that. You have to spread all this stuff out to make it count. If it's happening all the time, nobody cares. It's just, okay, here's routine Brock Lesnar. You know, he's fighting Randy Orton. We've kind of seen this before. He supposedly broke Triple H's arm, and we were supposed to believe that was real.
Right,
and we were supposed to believe that he went into his office with a sledgehammer, remember? And he, like, beat up everything in his office. And we were supposed to believe all that was real. And everyone thought it was ridiculous. It was just ridiculous.
You're not going to convince people.
What about Seth Rollins? Was it?
You just the Seth Rollins question was if he's really being heroic, and I disagree with Keith on this. I think that Seth Rollins, yes, he was still pining for Stephanie's approval, Joel, to a degree, but when Stephanie didn't give it to him and kind of turned on him a little bit, I think it was just kind of the light bulb going off moment that you want to see that leads to a heel seeing the light, to extend the metaphor, and deciding, hey, what have I been doing? You know, I've been aligning with these sleaze bags, and they didn't show any loyalty to me. That was a mistake. He needs to have that moment where he kind of says, I see the light. You fans were right all along. I don't know what I was doing. I'm my own guy. I'm better than this, and I'm going to prove it. I think that's what we saw in that promo, and I do think it was heroic to come out to save Roman Reigns. I don't think it was just out of anger. Yes, he was doing it to attack his opponents Sunday, Joel, but he also... I think the story is, and I think it resonates. He was out there to save an old Shield friend from a 2-on-1 attack inside a cage.
Yeah, that's part of the story. Like I said, you can't just have all of a sudden, after Seth Rollins has been this bad guy who turned on Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, you know, 2 years ago, and it was a big deal when he turned. You can't just all of a sudden, he's like, oh, I'm you know, just the good guy. This is part of the story. You know, and it's actually good storytelling that he's starting to see the light, you know, and he saved Roman Reigns. It's not just all of a sudden, okay, well, I guess I'm buddy with Roman Reigns after hating him for, you know, 2 years. This is just, you know, part of the story that, hey, maybe Roman was right. Roman didn't turn on me. I aligned with these people who stabbed me in the back, and now I see how it feels.
Absolutely. All right. In the final couple of minutes here, Joel, NXT Live. I did a Keller Hotline on it yesterday. I had higher expectations. I thought it was an enjoyable show for what it was. It had some really fun moments. I think it was representative of an NXT house show at the end of a 3-day run with a lot of driving, a lot of travel. I don't think they treated it as a particularly important show. I think it being in the afternoon hurt. There were some really cool memories and seeing Shinsuke live. Was one of them. Shinsuke didn't do a lot in that match relative to what we're used to, though. I talked to you midway into the show, but what did you think once it was all said and done and sleeping on it, assuming you got any sleep after seeing Shinsuke live, what did you think of the whole NXT experience? Were you higher on it than I was, or did you come away similar in thoughts to what I had to say?
Probably similar, maybe a little bit more down on it, because there was so much comedy in this house show. I mean, like, I've been conditioned, like a lot of other people, to expect that high level work rate that we're used to seeing on the TakeOver specials. And I wasn't expecting a 5-star match. Of course not. It's a house show. But I was expecting these guys to take it a little bit more seriously. And you kind of brought it to my attention, you know, halfway or when we met at intermission that, you know, this is the third day on a weekend house show, on a matinee show, where these guys are just kind of getting through this. You know, they just, they want to be done with this. You know, they're ready to be off the road for this weekend. And, you know, I would say I was a little bit disappointed because I was expecting to see, you know, some good matches. You know, spread it with some developmental matches, you know, kind of spread around in there. I mean, we obviously saw that early on, but I was expecting, you know, some better high quality matches. And clearly it was a day off for Shinsuke, which he obviously deserves, of course. But I was hoping we'd see a little bit more. We only saw Shinsuke get in there for, you know, a good few minutes and get in his spots. And it was great to see him live. I mean, think of it this way, that Shinsuke, who was a big star in Japan, he came over for ROH to do the big shows in Chicago, New York, Toronto. But for us in Minnesota to actually be able to see Shinsuke Nakamura, that's really cool because I never thought I'd be able to see Shinsuke in person before. And to see him live, I mean, that entrance is incredible live. I mean, the sound system in Roy Wilkins, like you had said before, it is a concert venue in Minnesota, and it has a great sound system. So that music for Samoa Joe and Shinsuke was perfect.
Yes.
It was great. I mean, everybody was standing up for Shinsuke.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a Samoa Joe song. I mean, what I want to say about Joe seeing him live for the first time is there is really something unique and special about Samoa Joe. He has such a swagger and a confidence when he comes to the ring and when he hits his moves that, you know, you believe what he's doing and you believe in that he is this, you know, this angry guy who's on a mean streak. I mean, there's just something about him that, you know, is really unique in wrestling that I could see him definitely coming to the main roster and just going on a tear and, you know, winning the WWE Championship or Universal Championship and just holding on to it for a long time. And Shinsuke, of course, we didn't get to see a lot of him wrestle. But to see him in person, he has this charisma unlike any other. I mean, I've been to quite a few wrestling shows now, nothing super big. But to see that entrance and to see such a unique and special superstar like Shinsuke, I mean, was a really cool experience.
And they had
super
some fun.
Cool.
And he and No Way Jose had some fun, did some fun stuff after the show. What'd you think of how, I mean, No Way Jose was working indie show. He's working indie shows for years in North Carolina. Bruce Mitchell, Torch senior columnist, has seen him a lot, talked about him. He's always had a charisma that stood out. But, man, it is tough to share a ring with Shinsuke and not just become invisible.
Yeah.
I don't think No Way Jose became invisible. How do you think – did he seem out of place to you, or did it seem like he rose to the occasion?
I think he rose to the occasion, honestly.
I do, too.
You know, he did some good work in the ring. Yeah. You know, and it gives him a great spot to be tagging with – two legendary wrestlers in Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura. I think he did a great job because the fans knew his gimmick. They were into him. You know, he was fun. He was entertaining. And, you know, he actually did some good work in the ring. The other guy, Riddick Moss, he was all right. I didn't think he was horrible. Interesting fact, I went to high school with him.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah.
That is cool, yeah.
He's 3 years older than me. Yeah, his name is Mike Rawlis. He went to Edina, and I knew his younger brother a little bit better, Nick. He still plays for the Gophers, but Mike did. And so it's kind of cool to see that because he was the premier athlete at Edina that everyone knew that this guy was super driven. He wanted to be in the NFL, and, you know, he's going to put his heart into whatever he does. And he was the same way when he was at the U, that he was this big, highly touted about player that, you know, could play in the NFL. And I think he just got the unique opportunity to be in NXT. And I think he's done a nice job with the short amount of time that he's been there. He wasn't great. He's not ready for the main roster. A lot of people on that house show are not ready for the main roster, but I think to be in that main event spot, he did all right. He did not embarrass himself at all. Some of the crowd, maybe they recognized him because his real name is not Riddick Moss.
Yeah.
So maybe they recognized him from going to the Gophers, but, you know, I think he did a nice job being in that main event. I think No Way Jose really rose to the occasion. Was disappointed we didn't get to see a lot more of Shinsuke, and I thought that Joe hit his signature spots, and they meant a lot when he did.
I agree. Yep. It was a show that was, and it's fine to have a show built around the main events. Asuka did nice work. I thought she had a good presence to her also. How about Ember Moon? How did she, what was your impression of her live?
She was fine. I mean, like, nothing really stood out to me about her.
Yeah.
But I think Asuka does a really nice job live.
Yep.
I was impressed with her. I think they both did a nice job actually laying stuff in. But, I mean, I guess it's not too hard to do compared to, like I said, some of the earlier stuff in there. But they for sure, without a doubt, had the best match on the show. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, you could try and justify the main event just because Shinsuke and Samoa Joe are in it. But the women's match was good. It was a good match.
Yep, I agree. All right, Joel, great job. It's been a fun conversation. Flew by. We've done exactly an hour and a half now. Appreciate it very much. How was it?
Wade, thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
It was awesome. I loved it.
I can't wait
to be back on. Next week?
You will be back on. You will be back on. Trust me. You did a great job. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to all of our listeners. PWTorch.com/Amazon is where you should go. If you're shopping Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. That's so 2015. You want to type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. Also, people ask this a lot, Loot Crate. Now there's a WWE wrestling crate over at lootcrate.com. If you want to save money subscribing to Loot Crate, they have all kinds of themes. One of them is WWE, but many others, including their main monthly box with pop culture franchises being featured in carefully curated themes like Star Wars, Marvel, The Walking Dead, The Legend of Zelda, and more. All kinds of details over at lootcrate.com. Check it out. Just enter coupon code PWTORCH. Once again, you'll save $3 on any new subscription. That's lootcrate.com. They ship to 27 countries. You get a box, a crate delivered to your front step once a month, and you can unbox it. You can film it if you want. Put it on YouTube. I hear people are doing that these days. There's a lot of that. You can look at other people, unbox them too. Check it out, lootcrate.com. It's pretty cool. We've had some nice feedback on this from people who have tried it. Use coupon code PWTORCH to save $3. And now they even have, just from the drop menu at the top of the page, a WWE crate that you can subscribe to. That will do it for me for today. Check out Joel Dennell's reports on Lucha Underground at PWTORCH.com. And tomorrow, Pat McNeil, veteran columnist with PW Torch, Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. Now the host of The Real Deal, the revived Real Deal with Pat McNeil, exclusively for VIP members. He also filled in for, he did fill in for me on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show this weekend, hosting part one of the show. And then Britt Whitmire and Bruce Mitchell did over 2 hours in depth on Starrcade 86, a very special edition of the VIP exclusive Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. Those two, talking Starrcade is one of my favorite things. Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Jim Cornette, The Midnight Express, The Rock and Roll Express, Jimmy Valiant, on and on. One of the most successful shows of its era. It is an incredible history lesson and super entertaining. And it takes you back to a different time in wrestling, but it was the beginning of this true super show era. And I don't want to say it was the last of the great Starrcades, but it was certainly one of the top few Starrcades ever in terms of Jim Crockett Promotion still being in their prime, pre-Ted Turner buyout, pre-Monday Night War era. It's one of the many perks you get with a VIP membership. So I'm going to throw to our commercial here, our pre-recorded commercial on the VIP membership to tell you more about it. A lot of cool stuff comes with a membership, and here are details on that. Thanks again to Joel Dennell, my co-host, and thanks to our callers. And until tomorrow, right after SmackDown, when Pat McNeil joins me, this is Wade Keller signing off. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. No!